Congratulations, Susan.
I did it. I am sorry for the delay, folks, but and I know that Craig has been telling you some good things about what's coming up. But let me just tell you briefly a little bit about Craig, although most of you, and there are now somewhat, I believe, about 16 or so people on our call. Craig is very special to the Storytellers Pig because it was through his efforts along with, I can never pronounce Vincent's name, Dr. Vincent Muliwakituku.
Good job.
Did I do good? Together, last February, they initiated the Storytellers Pig and are the two founding fathers, so to speak. And so without them, we wouldn't even be having this opportunity today. But before that, Craig has been telling stories and been somewhat of a humorous individual all his life. Since at the age of 11, he went door-to-door in his neighborhood in Berkeley, California, selling used jokes. And so he's been telling stories and hopefully not used jokes ever since then, both in and out of school. He is still in Berkeley and founded Expressions of Excellence to help professional men and women succeed in both sales and service as communicators and leaders. And so he's been quite active as a storyteller as well as a speaker. And he tells stories under the name of Hacken Boo. He's also a past NSA chapter president for Northern California, vice chair of the Storytelling Association of California, and in 2006 traveled with 40 other national storytelling network tellers to the People's Republic of China on a 17-day storytelling cultural exchange. Today, he's going to put us back in touch with our storytelling selves and show us ways of prospecting our past to find our own stories to tell and then live happily ever after, which is always my favorite part. So without further delay, it is my pleasure to introduce to you my friend, Craig Harrison.
Thank you, Susan. And I know the old joke in NSA is that we give them 3 points in a poem. I thought I'd start right off with a song, very short. Bear with me. But homegrown's all right with me. Homegrown is the way it should be. Homegrown is a good thing. Plant that bell and let it ring. Okay, a few of you on this call may recognize that as a song written by Neil Young about homegrown. And hearing that I'm from Berkeley, California, you might presume that I, too, am singing about wacky tobacco. But not today. I am referring, in this case, to homegrown humor. And the purpose of today's teleseminar is to put you back in touch with your storytelling selves and to remind you of the gold that is within you, referencing your past. And homegrown humor is about homegrown stories, experiences that you've had as a child, in school, in summer camp, in your family, on vacations, also in the teen years. Again, in school, in the summer, some of those road trips you took, stories involving your family, the college years, your work world. There are even stories that come from our profession, as well as travels domestically and internationally. And it's my belief that there is an epidemic out there, and you know this in NSA, of people telling the starfish story, people telling the lighthouse story, and worse yet, people telling OPS, other people's stories. And those of you in my program in Scottsdale know that that's an ethics violation, telling other people's stories without their permission. But beyond that, if we're going to be telling other people's stories, who's going to be telling our own stories? I'm firmly of the belief that to be most effective, whether you are a storyteller, a speaker, a trainer, a consultant, or coach, an entertainer, a subject matter expert, whoever you are, you have your own stories to tell. And Audiences appreciate passion. They respect authenticity, and when you tell your own stories, you're already several steps ahead. Now, right about now, people are probably saying, well, that's well and good, Craig, but I haven't scaled Mount Everest. I haven't won any wars as a general. I haven't founded any Fortune 50 companies. Nothing extraordinary has happened in my life. I haven't beaten cancer, et cetera, et cetera. I'm here today to inform you that in point of fact, you don't have to have, you know, spacewalked or been to the moon to have a story to tell. You don't have to have won an Olympic medal to be able to tell stories in your programs, either from the platform, in your coaching, in your consulting, as training tools. The truth is that an effective keynote, effective trainings, good coaching sessions, all of those allow us to use stories in different forms. And it is my belief that part of the problem is simply that we've been busy living our lives and we haven't looked lately at things that we've already experienced, past successes, past failures, exciting things that have happened. And today's session is designed to put you back in touch with things that have happened in your life that have value for you as a communicator. And what we'll be doing is I'll be giving you a lot of different ideas. Some of them you can work on your own. Others I will encourage you to partner up with somebody to uncover. And you can interview each other. You can ask each other these questions. And from them, you will find that your past is, in fact, laden with stories. They just need to be culled and cultivated and honed, which we can do with you in the Storyteller's Peg, and you can do in Toastmasters and elsewhere. But there's gold in them thar stories that you have. If you have the handout, and it is on my website, expressionsofexcellence.com, on my NSA page, nsa.html, it should also be available through the email that you received from NSA about this teleseminar. In this long handout, you'll notice on page one that there are a number of reasons why you can be telling your own stories, and they don't have to be your signature story. You don't need a 9 to 10 minute tour de force to effectively use story to reinforce the points that you're trying to make with audiences. You can use stories in much shorter forms. You can tell 1 to 2 minute stories. Stories that are short, that are simple, that are modest in scope, but have great value to listeners because they're not just your story, but they resonate with your audience members because they too have had similar stories or they too have been in similar situations. That's the power of story. You see, we really are wired for story, and it's a wonderful way in which audiences can connect with us and we can connect with them on a heart level. Now, one of the great things is that when we look at our past anew, it turns out that some of the experiences that we had that were very traumatic at the time or that we labeled as negative experiences actually have great comedic value if we're willing to share them. If we've processed them for ourselves, we've come to terms with them, and we're willing to be vulnerable from the platform. And so I want to encourage you to look anew at some of the things that have happened in your life from the standpoint of, well, I obviously survived these experiences. Now, how can I share them with others in a way that encourages them or gives them confidence or lets them know they are not alone in their experience? And I will point out on the middle of page one that there is a formula in humor that we use a lot in comedy, and that is the formula that says that any tragedy plus time equals comedy. It's just a matter of processing the original fear or shame or frustration or embarrassment and then sharing it. On the bottom of page one, I've given you six different easy way to look for comedic stories in your life. Right now as we're talking, think about a time when something went wrong in your life. Is there something you did that went wrong? Certainly I've had many of experiences like this where something has gone wrong. I remember the first time I was sailing with my father on the Charles River in Boston, and we thought we knew what we were doing. We were out soloing, and we didn't, and we crashed into the docks, and people were jumping ship from the dock and whatnot. There was great humor there. At the time, it was very embarrassing. I've talked before about a coming-of-age ceremony for me as a Jewish boy, a bar mitzvah, in which everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And for years, it was embarrassing. But now that I've had time to get some therapy about it, I'm just fine with it. And when I share the story, people say to me, well, sounds like the baptism, or sounds like a wedding experience we had, or sounds like a graduation experience I had. So you'll find when you share a humorous story, it opens people's hearts and it puts them in touch with their own experiences, thus bonding you further. Another one is if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, oftentimes there is humor in that experience. I had an experience where I was younger and I was in the desert in a foreign country. My mother and I were lost, and I found a shortcut for us to take, which turned out to be this freshly paved road with no traffic at all that was really a godsend and a shortcut back to a hotel that turned out, of all things, to be an airport runway. Of course, this would never happen today. You'd never get near an airport runway. But wrong place at the wrong time, a great opportunity to find humor. Any situation where you've put your foot in your mouth can be funny. And again, think about a situation. I had a situation where I was saying the wrong thing in a job interview, and it was very embarrassing. But there's wonderful learning in that situation. Anytime a misunderstanding has occurred, that's another great opportunity. Let's see. I had a misunderstanding where I did interview for a job on a Friday at a high-tech company. And, you know, on Friday, everybody's dressed in jeans and T-shirt. And the interview went well, and I was excited, and I was going to start a week from Monday. So a week from Monday comes, and I arrive with my nicest pair of jeans and my coolest political T-shirt, only to realize that I had interviewed on casual Friday, but of course, the rest of the week, everybody wore a business attire. Very embarrassing, but definitely learning points in that experience. Anytime the unexpected happens, there's humor there. And also, anytime you are a fish out of water, there's usually humor there. I talk about the first time I went to a meditation conference and tell the story of what that was like. Everybody was asking me how long I'd been in practice. You'd have thought I was at a medical convention, and a lot of other funny things. They don't clap. They simply hold up their hands and tap their fingers to their thumb, and they twinkle their fingers to applaud, and many other things that are funny. Anytime that you're a fish out of water, there's usually comedic value there if you tend to probe it and prospect it and perhaps exaggerate it a bit. Now, the other category that's not on the bottom of page one is a brush with fame. Many times people are enamored of famous people, and if you've had a brush with fame, if you've had an interaction with somebody famous, there could be humor there. I tell a story of being in Las Vegas in a high rollers line to be seated at a restaurant. I'm seated with somebody, and I notice that Sinbad is also in this line, Sinbad the comedian, and he's seated a few tables from us. As it turns out, I'm observing him. He doesn't know we're there. My buddy and I were there for a basketball coach's clinic. What happens is there's a change of shifts, so the employees come to our table and tell us, they come to each table and let people know, well, I'm going off shift, but this is Carrie, and she's going to be taking over for you, and it's been a pleasure to serve you. And they come to Sinbad's table and tell him, and as they approach our table, this being Vegas, I jokingly say, please, please, no autographs this morning. And, of course, these employees are dumbstruck because they know you don't ask for autographs from anybody in Vegas. That's the culture there. But Sinbad, apparently unaware that somebody famous is sitting behind him, turns around as if, I'm a who's this person who's more famous than me? Of course, I smile and I wink. And this is my Sinbad story, but I use it to talk about being one-upped and to talk about how everybody is somebody to somebody. At any rate, you can see in ways such as these, there are many opportunities to prospect your past for comedic stories and experiences that you can fashion into stories. Page 2 just summarizes some of the different ways that we use stories in our programs. I'd like to jump to page 3 and get you to start thinking about your own life and things that have happened in your life that you can use as teaching tools or to entertain your audiences. I believe very strongly that we all have a first for humor, that there is great humor in the first time that we do things. Pages 3 and 4 are really designed for you to pick a partner and to interview each other, to look at your past experiences and recall what it was like. Did you have a memorable first day in school? It could be your grade school, your junior high or high school. It could be your religious school, parochial school. So many different possible experiences, but many people have had a memorable first day. It may have been great. It may have been grating. But nevertheless, if you're willing to explore it, if you're willing to hone it into a story, there's great humor there. Similarly, overnights at camp, your first overnight could be very scary. There could be ghost stories or pranks or all sorts of sounds being out in the wild in an unfamiliar environment. I've listed your first pimple. Maybe not the thing you want to talk about, but depending on who your audience is, maybe it is appropriate. Your first boyfriend, your first girlfriend, your first kiss, your first breakup. For some people, their first time they have alcohol. I remember the first time that I chewed tobacco. Nobody told me that you're not supposed to swallow it. There's a story there. For many people, there's great humor in their first trip overseas to another country where the customs are different, the language is different, the attire is different. There's so many interesting things that happen overseas. For many of you, your first job is a memorable experience, and we can all relate. Those of you that are married or are shacked up, hooked up, the first time you saw your partner, many times there's a memorable story about the first time you connected with your mate, and what was that like, and were the first impressions correct or not. And understand that your audiences greatly enjoy these stories because it puts them in touch with their own experiences. There's something universal here. One of the great things about stories is that they tap universal truths and archetypal themes, and that's very powerful. Continuing on with our list on page 4, certainly those of you that perhaps are not on your first wife or husband, you might have a story about your first wife or husband. You do want to be careful there. I've jokingly listed your first million, but these days it's up to you whether it's you tell the story of how you earned your first million or perhaps the first million that you lost. Each of those is no doubt a story. I've listed your first audit, not because I presume that any of you have been audited. I was in that unenviable position of being audited. A few years ago, I had been new to speaking, was volunteering a lot, and I'd yet to turn a profit. And this arose the suspicions of the IRS, and they sent me a love letter that asked me, "Mr. Harrison, concerning your speaking, training, consulting, coaching business, is this a profit-making endeavor?" Very embarrassing, but I use this story in many situations when I'm talking to other speakers and when I'm talking to people about the power of focus and what happens when you are so busy volunteering that you forget to mind your own business. So there's great value there. I did list something called your first arrest, hopefully your only arrest, or perhaps a case of mistaken identity. All of these have comedic value. Let's do this, Susan. At this moment, I've covered a lot of material. I'd like to break, and if we can unmute people, let me see if there are some questions or comments at this time. And I'll wait. believe it should be star 5 for Susan.
Oh. Okay. Hello? Hi, this is Hazel Wagner. I do have a question.
Yes, please, Hazel.
You started out by talking about the major things that have happened in people's lives, and some of those are difficult or really sad, and you mentioned in your materials that you handed out that sometimes very, very difficult or sad things later when you look back on them can be filled with humor. Can you, the ones you gave, I could imagine how about humor, but, I mean, sometimes, for instance, I'm a cancer survivor, and lots of people are in an audience these days. Are these, do you take those things and make humor out of it, or is that out of the realm?
Okay, an excellent question. Depending on what your topic is and who the audience is, it can be appropriate to share something serious like overcoming cancer. However, the one thing I would caution all speakers about is that we are not there to when we speak, we should not be using our audience for our own therapy. We are there to entertain them or educate them or inspire them. So the important thing is that you must have processed already the cancer experience. You should not be telling this story to make yourself feel good, but only if it's got value for your audience. I feel very strongly, however, that it is when a speaker can be real and can be vulnerable and can be honest with an audience, it boosts your credibility and they connect much better with you. Now, it can be a bummer for some people. Some people definitely don't want to come to a program where everything is doom and gloom. They're actually enjoying your program because it's a respite from the reality out there. But it's interesting. My colleague and friend Alan Klein, CSP, the Jollytologist, you know, he's written books about the healing power of humor in situations such as cancer. You know, his wife had passed of cancer some years ago, and so. Don't underestimate the value of using humor, but again, you don't want to make light of other people's travails, but if you were able to find humor in your own battle with cancer, I think that's very inspirational. So I hope that's given you an effective answer.
Craig,
yep.
This is Vincent Kitugo here.
Hi.
And that's a very good question, and Craig, you really did a great job in responding to that. I grew up in Africa, and one of the things which was very, very hard for me to accept was the poverty I grew up with. I had been speaking for almost 10 years before I could tell people that I had my first underwear when I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have found, and actually it wasn't until very recently that I was able to tell people that my father has three wives concurrently. So my suggestion is this: always start with a friendly group. Always start with the people who you know, regardless of, what they hear, they will still... You are not going to feel rejected. You are not going to feel so vulnerable that you feel like a part of you is gone.
That's great advice, Vincent. I agree completely. You've really got to ease into this, and so the advice to start with a receptive audience, a warm audience, is good. Only you will know what you're comfortable speaking about and to whom, but definitely take it slowly.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Are there other questions at this time, or shall I press on with pages 5, 6, and 7?
Press on.
Very well. Excellent. So again, pages 3 and 4 are designed to be used with a partner. It's much easier to uncover things in your past when somebody is probing you gently about them. What I've done on
pages 5 and 6 is I've provided a similar sort of method for you to identify stories in your own life. And again, you can answer these questions on page 5 and 6 or on page 5 on your own, but it might be better to do it with somebody. For each of you, however, it's very easy to answer what it is that you speak about. Perhaps you speak about leadership or customer service or sales or holistic health or risk-taking or so many other different things. So I would encourage you to certainly fill that out. What is your name? Where are you born? In the program I did in Scottsdale, I asked for a volunteer. Somebody came up. I took her through these questions. And while these questions aren't a silver bullet in any respect, based on the answers, I asked other questions because my curiosity naturally took me a certain direction. And when I spoke with a woman who came up on stage, she talked about, well, you know, ours was kind of an unremarkable childhood. Not much happened. I was the oldest child, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But it turns out that there was an incident in her life that was memorable, and that it had a lot to do with the fact that she was the oldest child, and being the oldest child comes with certain responsibilities. Certainly being the youngest child comes with privileges. Being the middle child comes with some challenges. So you know, everybody has a story, and in your audience at any given time, there are people that are middle children, that are only children, one or two that might have been hatched. But at any rate, you understand that all sorts of things may be happening in your own life that you're not aware of until somebody starts to ask you these questions. So among the questions I ask, you know, where were you born? Where are you in the position in your family? Where did you grow up? Was your childhood happy, sad, lonely, tumultuous? In some cases, we have people that are military babies or, you know, embassy babies, and they've been from one place to another. Every time the State Department would reassign their parents, they would go somewhere else. There's wonderful story potential in that experience. And certainly, we want to ask ourselves and each other, what are the most vivid childhood memories we have? Were they positive? Were they negative? What were they of? What was it like? And then we really want to get into some other experiences as well. So I've asked the question, what was your favorite smell from childhood? Because they tell us that the olfactory sense is very strong, and a smell can take us back in a heartbeat to a time and a place. And when we tell our stories, that's why we want to include color and adjectives and smells and tastes and sounds. That's what really brings a story to life and transforms it from a set of facts on paper to something we can live and breathe and share with other people. A couple of other questions here. If your life had a title, what might it be? Or if there is a theme that is prevalent in your life, what is that theme? Some of you have already identified it. Others of you may be thinking about this for the first time. I suspect most speakers have dealt with this before. Do you have a motto? What is it? Have you ever done anything extraordinary? Or perhaps you've witnessed something extraordinary? Here again is our brush with fame. And then who was influential in your life? Was there somebody, a teacher, a relative, a neighbor, somebody you interacted with that changed the course of your life? There's probably a story there. I'm sure there's a story there. Finding the humor in it may be harder, but nevertheless, it's important to get back in touch with these sorts of things from our childhood and from our lives. Pages 3, 4, and 5 provide you all sorts of ways to uncover stories in your past. Once you've identified stories that you believe have value to share with your audiences, the challenge now becomes how to craft them, how to hone them, how to develop them into something that can be used in your keynotes or your training or your coaching work or in other ways to impact your audience or your students or your clients or customers. What I've done on page 8, I'm sorry, on page 6, is I've given you a simple format, a very basic story spine, if you will, a framework for telling your stories, although page 6 is really almost a staging area. It's a place where you can put down notes about the story that you're going to tell. Perhaps you have an opening line already. Perhaps not. Sometimes the opening line comes later. Not to worry. By the way, if you were on a teleseminar of ours a couple of months ago, Patricia Fripp has wonderful story opening lines, and she shared them with us. They are, I believe, uploaded to our website. There are story openers, opening lines that are marvelous. My Toastmasters Club has been using them for the last month for our table topics. And again, an opening line is very important. Beyond that, however, you want to set the scene for your story. What is the location, the day and the date, or the time and the location? And by the way, again, these can be 1 to 2 minute stories. They don't have to be long stories or elaborate stories. And I don't know that they necessarily even need to be stories that you time with a stopwatch. But the fact that you can tell a story in a couple of minutes is important. Now, as you're developing the particular story that you may have in mind right now, what is the scene? Give us a time and a place. Give us a context. Where is the action going to occur? Now, what are the characters of this story? You know, every story has characters in it. Who are the characters? Are you one of the characters? Who are the other characters? Describe them. Do they have a distinctive name or a distinctive look or a distinctive gait or something about them that's memorable, that stands out? And once you've fleshed out a couple of the characters, then, of course, there's going to be action. There's going to be something, because most stories, to be a story, need something going on. They need a challenge, an obstacle, a struggle, a task, some impediment, something going on that's got to be dealt with. So now you want to describe what that is. Give us the sights and the smells and the sounds of it. Is there some drama? Is there some mystery? Is there great comedic value? How does this all come to climax? What's going on? What are you leading up to? Now, many stories have a twist or a moral or a conclusion, but you needn't necessarily explicitly identify what it is. Sometimes your audiences will do that for you. Sometimes they'll come up with different things for themselves than you intended, and that's okay. Other times you can tie it back to your learning point to let them know why you shared it. And this is actually a debate that occurs. Many storytellers believe that it is not at all appropriate for us to put the moral on the story or to draw the conclusion, that is really left for the listener. And in many cases, I do that. And in many cases, I learn from my audiences things that I didn't even realize about the stories that I tell. People interpret things in different ways, and they have different perspectives. But what is the universal quality of your story? Earlier, a question was asked about cancer, and whether or not people in your audience are struggling with cancer, you can rest assured that other members of their family are, other people in their workplace, or there may be other illnesses. People may be battling a variety of other illnesses that are similar in scope. So know that there's got to be a universal quality to your story, and we really want to tap into that, because that's where we get buy-in from everybody. Lastly, you can give your title, your story a title. Let's do this. On page 7, what I've done is listed in column 1 a few universal truths and a few themes. I'd like each of you to be thinking about the stories that you tell and about the themes that are inherent already in the programs that you deliver. Whether you're delivering a keynote, whether you're delivering training, whether you're coaching clients, what are the themes that you are extolling, or what are the themes that are recurring in your instruction? I've listed a few of them. Certainly the truth of how risk leads to reward, the golden rule, the importance of never giving up, some of the wonderful commandments, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lie, things related to that, having faith, being responsible, honoring the process. You see that there are all sorts of universal truths and themes that we can build upon or reinforce through our stories. It's just a matter of identifying. We can either work backwards, what is the truth that we want to underscore, and now what story will do that, or we can share our story and then extract from it what is the kernel of truth, what is the universal truth, what is the learning point. And I will say that because we're looking for humor, we don't necessarily need to solve the world's problems with our stories. A good story that has a cathartic release for people is good enough. However, oftentimes in a story, there are learning points, there are universal truths, there are wonderful themes that the story reinforces. If you'd like, you can download a 2-page PDF file from me that has the same table. On one page, it has the universal truth followed by column 2, story. And on page 2, it has column 1 is the story column, and the universal truth is in the second column. I would invite all of you to develop your own list of stories and share them and ask audiences, perhaps in your Toastmasters Club or your Story Swap or amongst your Mastermind group, ask them what is the universal truth that you found in this story. And you'll find that one story may have many, many learning points within it. In my introduction, Susan alluded to the fact that I went door-to-door as an 11-year-old selling used jokes. And I tell this story about ringing doorbells and telling jokes and selling 100 jokes for a dollar to my neighbors. And in the process of telling this story, I describe how I would tell jokes and they would tell me jokes, and those would later be refashioned into Volume 2 and Volume 3. I would tell jokes and they would coach me on how they tell the joke, and I would get better and better at telling jokes over the course of the summer. I would tell jokes and some people would pay me to go away. One person paid me to customize a cover for his wife because it was their anniversary the next day and he did not have a present for her. They would tell me about the rest of the people in the neighborhood and what types of jokes to tell them and what things I could say to sell more of my jokes. I use this story not just for laughs, but in my sales programs to talk about things like referral sales and building rapport with strangers. I use it in my customer service programs to talk about listening to my customers and catering to their needs and customizing. I use this in my storytelling programs to explain how the power of story is great. Interestingly, when I'm done telling this story, I'll often ask the audience, what did you construe about me based on this story? And I actually tell this story as well for job seekers, and I tell about how I used this very story in a job interview when the interview wasn't going well. What happens when I break frame and ask the audience what they heard in this story is that I get reflected back many, many, many things. I get reflected back that I was confident, or that I was a risk taker, or that I had good people skills, or that I was a good listener, or that I was entrepreneurial. So if I were to tell the audience, oh, the thing you should take about this story, take from this story is simply that I'm funny. Well, quite frankly, that's the one thing that doesn't get reflected back to me as often as I would have thought. So you see that one story can actually contain within it many, many learning points, many, many lessons, and also can speak volumes about the teller in this case. And that's what we want for your stories. We want them to entertain, but also to educate, to enlighten, to encourage, to inspire, to do so many wonderful things. Susan, I think it's appropriate at this time to unmute folks and allow them to ask more questions or to clarify anything that I may have glossed over. Don't be bashful. Any questions at this time?
Craig?
Yes.
This is Max.
Hi, Max.
Hi, Craig. I just wanted to reply or comment a little bit on your excellent point, something to consider. Should we give the point of the story to the audience? A lot of times it depends on the audience, I find. If it's a corporate audience, sometimes I think you jolly well better say the point, you know, or it falls into the principle of, I'm sorry your dog died, but so what? In literature, you need to be very, very careful not to, Christina Baldwin, who is one of my mentors, said, you want to be careful that the meaning doesn't pull the rug out from under the feeling. So the danger would be, of course, coming across as a preacher, and in a storytelling festival, if you deigned to tell what the moral of the story was, you might be hung for that. You know, that's a big no-no. But I also like to embed the meaning into the story so that they are beginning to understand what's happening at the end. And if you're lyrical at the last of it, I find out that you can pretty well, they know what the story means without being too literal in your statement of it. Does that sound valid, what I said?
It sounds brilliant. It's actually great. Anytime we get too didactic, I think it turns people off. I think that's brilliant to embed within the story and to help them along as we go. We know from experience that in every audience, people learn differently and they listen differently. And some people are right there with our stories, and other people zone out for any number of reasons. And so anything that keeps them on the beam, so to speak, I think is worthwhile.
Yep. So, amen.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Yeah, and, you know, while being hung could be entertaining for the rest of the audience, it doesn't do much for us. So offer self-preservation.
Yay.
Thank you, Max. Other questions at this time? And I can certainly pose a question as well, for those of you who are still formulating questions. I've given you many, many questions about your own past. What has come up for you? What are you toying with talking about? And or what would you like help linking to your chosen topic or your chosen theme? Are there ways that we can help you identify or look anew at something in your life that we could be using for stories? I guess in a live program, we would be promising something for free for somebody to volunteer.
I have a comment.
Yes, please.
This is Lois from Missoula, Montana, and I have a brain injury. And what I've learned in my storytelling is, you know, I speak about the emotional journey of adjusting to a sudden life change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to learn how to use my brain injury story and relate it differently to the audiences, as you were talking about with customer service and sales. And so how I've learned to relate, what I've been taught is that a brain injury is sometimes too big of a thing for most people to, or an unusual thing for most people to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make sure that when I'm telling my story, that I have to connect it to my audience. And for example, with workplace audiences, we often hear that, a common theme in the workplace is to do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
So with a brain injury, I had to do more with less ability. Mm-hmm. So the same systems and strategies that I used to get the job done, to prioritize and to ask for help, and the different things I had to do to get my job done still relate to the workplace. So often I'm told, you're lucky that you have such a compelling story, and I think, you know, it is a great story, but it takes so much extra work to relate it to the specific audience that I'm speaking to so that it has meaning and value for them, too.
Right. It is a challenge, and I'm sure that audiences are nervous, and they don't quite know what to do with something so big, because in many cases we can relate, but that may be something that at first glance seems like they couldn't possibly understand, and yet I like what how you've linked it to do more with less.
And so what I've learned to do is I've learned to take the challenges that my brain injury poses and relate it to their challenges, and so again, you know, it has meaning and value for them.
That sounds excellent. And are these, is there laughter in your programs?
A lot. There's a lot of laughter because there's a lot of confusion and chaos that, as well as, you know, that we still all run into. So when we're blindsided and we're not expecting something, we have to learn to, you know, use humor to quickly reset our emotions, so that we can, you know, make good decisions and do our best job. So I had to learn how to find a way, and I used humor to accept the things that would happen to me and let them go so that I could move on and problem solve at my highest ability.
Well, to which I say congratulations, because if people are laughing, then you've crossed that chasm, then they're totally with you. That is great.
Something you said earlier about being able to have finished with the experience had great meaning to me, because I had to be able to tell the story without feeling emotionally attached to it. I couldn't, you know, I could show my emotions to a certain level in my storytelling, but I had to be over the experience.
Craig, Max, could I comment real quick on what Lois just said?
Okay, sure.
Just real quick, I think that's wonderful what you said, and there's a phrase that someone told me, oh, this must be 15, 20 years ago, but it stayed with me, and it's Lois reminded me of it, that if something happens to us, and it's very dramatic, we should not intend to divorce ourselves from the emotions, but we must be senior to them. Isn't that a great way to say it? You can't divorce yourself. You can't divorce yourself from the emotion that you had, but we can be senior to it, which means it's processed. And as Grady Jim Robinson once said, you know, not all stories should be told at all times. We do need to be senior to the emotions.
Right.
So,
and how I related to that is that I often re-experience some of those emotions, but I never lose my control.
Yeah.
Right. I do think at some point in the coming months, we're going to have a teleseminar on how to keep the stories fresh. Karen Dietz is going to talk to us about how to tell the same story repeatedly but keep it fresh and to remain in the moment. I would just add to what Max said, and that was beautifully said, that you see, it becomes everyone's story when you share it. So it is your story. By sharing it from the platform, you're allowing them to experience it with you, and so it's yes, it is more than just your story now. And so, yeah, we wouldn't want you to dissociate yourself entirely from the emotions of it, but allow them to share in it with you, and that's great. All right, I think we have time for a couple more questions, if there are any. So, by all means. Don't be bashful.
Well, Craig, I don't think there's very many bashful people on this call. However, I would say that if the rest of the participants have taken as many notes as I have and have been having a racing brain, so to speak, in terms of all the different stories that I've forgotten over the years, then our time has truly been well spent, and you have given us much not only to to think about, but to mull over and to talk about with our friendly audiences, our mastermind groups, our chapters, our storyteller peg colleagues, and get comfortable with some of those stories and find out what makes people laugh and what doesn't, which is often different than what I think sitting in my own little office. I'm just in hysterics, and I tell it to somebody else, and they look at me like, you know, I've lost my mind. So I would like to say on behalf of all of the participants today and the listeners, thank you so much for sharing of your experience and expertise. It has been not only enlightening but educational, and we appreciate that. If anyone has a final question, now is the time to do that.
This is Donna calling from Atlanta.
Sure, hi. Donna.
Yes. This is very, very, very good, by the way. I thought it was excellent. Got me thinking about stories. Craig, you had mentioned something about opening lines, a handout that Patricia had or something. I wanted to understand that a little bit better.
Yes, Patricia Fripp has compiled a two-page PowerPoint list of wonderful opening lines to start your story with if you don't already have an opening line. I believe it's on our Storytellers Peg website, but we've been having some difficulties getting things labeled effectively on that site. So if nothing else, you could email myself or Brian Samrick, our teleseminar coordinator. Why don't you email me, and I'll make sure anyone who'd like to receive this, I have Fripp's permission to share it. Oddly, it's not on Fripp's site, but craig@expressionsofexcellence.com, and just put in the subject line Fripp or opening lines, and I'll send you two different PowerPoint files of hers.
Okay, and those are opening lines you would use before you move into your story?
Actually, they're a way to start a story.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
I will email you as soon as I open up my Outlook.
And I'll just mention very briefly, I spoke to the Heartland chapter on The Speaker as Storyteller recently, and we uncovered a new category of story we didn't know existed before, and that is the Fripp story. Many of us, it turns out, have stories about the great Patricia Fripp. So if you've been around NSA, surely you have Fripp stories too. And in NSA circles, they are very eminently tellable. So, and she loves it too. So consider those.
Thanks so much, Craig, for your again, for your experience, your expertise, and your willingness to share with us. And without further ado, since we're going to be cut off anyway, we will say thank you, remind everyone that we have regularly scheduled teleseminars, and the next one will be next month on the second Tuesday, whatever that date is. And you'll
January 13th.
Thank you. You will be hearing more about that in upcoming emails from the NSA office. So we appreciate your time, and if we don't have an opportunity to connect between now and then, I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season, and we will look forward to all the stories that come out of your celebrations with family and friends. Thanks for being here, and thank you again, Craig.
Thank you again, Craig.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you for recording, Susan.